Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in today. So, climate change. How do you come up with a plan that actually makes a significant difference and that people will follow? Maybe even want to follow? I'm talking about plans for Davis and Yolo County, but really, any city, any county. Our guest today has some ideas about this. He's Richard McCann, an energy consultant and founding partner of M-Cubed Consulting, which has an office in Davis. On February 9th, he'll talk in Davis about effective local climate actions, including why local government plans seem to hit a pause when they need to jump into action. The reasons include wishful thinking about how people will participate. Richard, thanks for talking with us today on Davisville.
Good day. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So Davis does have a climate adaptation and action plan, as does Yolo County. Each wants the jurisdictions to go net zero on carbon emissions at least. I think the county by 2030, the city by 2040. Davis is scheduled to update its plan this year. Now, you consulted on the county plan, I understand, and you were part of the review of the Davis plan?
That's correct. Yes. Okay. So I was. I actually pulled together the consulting team for the Yolo plan because I knew it was coming, and recruited the lead firm, Dudek, who I'd worked with on other projects in the past. So I participated in that plan. And then on the Davis plan, I was on the Natural Resources Commission at the time and reviewed that plan, had some significant inputs into how that plan was developed.
Okay. Well, so how do you size them up? I mean, are they realistic?
They are somewhat realistic in certain parts, but some of this was driven by their ambition to get to net zero when, in fact, they really only have a control over a minority of the emissions within their jurisdictions. So in both cases, transportation is the single largest emission source by, I think it's 60 or 70% of the emission inventory, as they call it, for both jurisdictions. And that's all controlled by state and federal policy. So it's very difficult for local jurisdictions to come up with ways to offset those emissions in any meaningful way. They can encourage certain things like local charging networks or having parking restrictions, things like that, or encouraging transit. But those will only make relatively small dents in the overall emission inventory in the end going out into the future. And then there's other activities that also are not really technologically ready to have zero emissions. And this is particularly important for the county because there is almost no farming technology that is zero emission technology out there. There's not electric tractors. There are really substantial. The electric technologies that are out there have not been tested for the rigor of the farming activities. So you have a whole big sector that largely will be untouched for a while because of that. And so there's things like that. There's other things where because they were pursuing trying to find every single emission reduction, they went after measures that really don't have much reduction because they were looking for every last ton. And so they wasted time on trying to pursue those types of activities.
Is it fair to say there's a fair amount of window dressing in these plans then? I mean, if they're pursuing goals that can't realistically be achieved either because they don't control Interstate 80 going through Davis or because you don't have farm equipment in a big agricultural county, I mean, I'm struck by that. The idea is it's great to have the goal, but if it's not realistic, then is it even really a goal?
That's a very good question. As to, I think at some point early on, somebody should have had a very realistic, strong, realistic conversation with the people who were pushing for these zero goals and said, okay, we need to actually be very cognizant of what the limits are of what a local entity can do to achieve these emission reductions and carve out that portion that is controllable. And then the other thing is to make sure that what you're putting your effort into has a big bang for that and not get diverted by trying to chase all the little things that are out there. And also the things that are sexy, that look really cool. Like bike paths do not produce much in terms of emission reductions, but everybody wants them. But they don't realize that if you're focusing on emission reductions, that's not where you're going to gain them.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is one reason I was drawn to the subject of the forum that you're going to have. Because when I think about something, a big problem, almost any big problem, but at the moment we're talking about climate change, you know, there's the group that cares deeply. There's the group, usually on any subject, that says, that's not a problem at all. And then there's the vast group that's like, not engaged. They find it boring. They find it complicated. They find it overwhelming, maybe. And so the idea that you wanted to talk about what could make a plan actually work, I mean, it's almost refreshing because you're talking, you're trying to sort of engage the issue, you know, as it is. I said, all right, we've got a problem. What can we do? And if you keep it grounded, I'm reminded a little bit here of, while I was researching for this, I came across a paper that Carl Weick wrote for American Psychologist in 1984, Small Wins, Redefining the Scale of Social Problems. And he had this insight. I'll just quote from it here. People often define social problems in ways that overwhelm their ability to do anything about them. When social problems are described this way, efforts to convey their gravity disable the very resources of thought and action necessary to change them. Ironically, people often can't solve problems unless they think they aren't problems. Does any of that resonate with, I mean, you're in the thick of this subject.
I think that's really, to a large extent, true in this case, in that people tried to define the problem as eliminating all emissions. And then they look at it and go, we can't eliminate all emissions. And then a small group of people say, well, we can do all of these 40 different actions in order to reduce emissions. But in fact, maybe a half dozen of those are actually the ones that get you 80% of the way there of what you can actually reduce. So if going back to the example of within Yolo County, if you've got 40% of the remaining emissions that you can reduce through local actions, you might be able to reduce 30% of them by taking a half dozen individual actions that people can just focus on and jump on those sorts of things. And in fact, in part, Yolo County initially did a good job of that. They did eight early actions that they did before we got into doing the actual climate action plan. And those actions, they were not big in and of themselves, but they kind of set the table for doing other actions further on. And so taking that kind of approach where people can grab onto something and say, oh yeah, this starts us down the path in this particular way in order to get to getting actual emission reductions is maybe a better way to approach it, starting by going out and identifying not so much some big plan, but going out and saying, okay, here's a big thing that we can go after, and here's another big thing that we can go after, and then just assemble it that way without worrying too much about where you're trying to get to in the end, because this transformation is going to be so big eventually that we may not even know where we end up going in this path. So how does the introduction of electric vehicles affect all of our other transportation choices?
Okay.
Right? So like transit. Is transit actually effective emission reduction if we all have electric vehicles?
Yeah, honestly, I've thought about that. People talk about wanting to reduce the number of car trips, and I thought, but if it's an electric car trip, that's very different than if it's gasoline-powered. So even something like parking has a very different footprint, right? If it's an electric car parking downtown versus if it's, a diesel car from 1968, which I remember growing up, you know, would create their own clouds driving around.
Right.
So what do we do? You were talking generally there. Can you think like of an example of something that we could do, say in Davis or in Yolo County, that could make a difference and would be realistic?
I'll give you two examples. One that did not end up in the Davis Climate Action Plan, which I was really disappointed in. And I'm going to say my wife, actually, she was on the NRC before I was. I succeeded the family seat on the NRC.
Oh, so can I ask who she was?
Anya McCann. Yeah,
okay.
So she was on the NRC while I was on the Utilities Commission. And then she left to work on some other things. She runs a group. Actually, I'm going to, since we're talking about climate change, I'm going to go to a side. She runs a group called Cool Cuisine that promotes plant-based dining in Davis. And we together, she does almost all the organizing. I hand out the name badges. She organizes dinners at different restaurants all around Davis on a roughly monthly basis. And you can go to coolcuisine.net and see the schedule of the events. I know she just did a tour of the co-op, of the plant-based items in the co-op.
The Davis Food Co-op.
Davis Food Co-op. And I've forgotten where the next event is. I think it's at Red Noodle 88. Anyway, you can go and come and attend, and everybody's welcome. They should go on the website and RSVP so that they know how many people are going to show up. And there's more of these that are going to be happening. So that's like her climate action thing that she's doing now and that she puts her effort into. She also ran the burger battle in 2019, many people will remember, and that was run through Cool Cuisine. Go back to what her, she worked with a group and they set up a parking lot shade ordinance to replace the one that for trees, and it involved basically putting up solar panel canopies up in the parking lots. And so then I took that further while I was on the NRC and was asking them to include EV chargers, because it worked out that basically you could have one parking spot was worth like planting 40 trees or something like that in terms of the emission reductions, the potential emission reductions.
One parking spot covered by solar?
With an EV charger could reduce the emissions by basically facilitating an electric vehicle as much as planting a whole bunch of trees.
Okay.
So that's one of those things where the ordinance was basically ready to go to the city council like 3 years ago. And well, no, it's more longer ago than that, 4 years ago. They did not include that in the climate action plan, even though it was clearly an obvious way of getting emission reduction. So that was one of those things that it's already set to go, could have a very big impact because you could have solar panels charging electric vehicles in many of the commercial establishments around the city. So that's one example. But the other one that was a bigger deal for me was require that houses that are sold electrify their heating and appliances within the house when it's at the time of sale. So the real estate agents came in and objected to this because there were some impediments to some houses in town having enough electric service, either
houses, probably.
Yeah, older houses that didn't either have service in the street or they didn't have an electric panel that was sufficient to do that. Well, basically, from what the calculations that I worked out, like something like 3/4 of the houses in Davis are actually have enough electric service that they're doing. So the problem was that the city council, at the behest of one particular city council member who's not longer on the council, said, I think that we're going to make this a voluntary program. We're not going to have a requirement to do this. And so at that point, that kind of just totally gutted that ordinance. I suspect that virtually no one is doing any kind of conversion of their houses. So
it can be expensive, I think, though.
So that was the other key part. We did this at sale a house. What do you think the amount of equity is that individual people in Davis have in their house when they're selling their house?
Yeah, well, right? Obviously for some people, they've made hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this electrification might cost $25,000 to do this, maybe $30,000. These people have made a huge amount of money off these houses. It seems like that they could be willing to help finance the future by giving a little bit of that equity to help us in the future.
So that's like a small conversation that's part of a larger plan, right? I mean, basically what you'd be telling a homeowner who has made a killing. I shouldn't say that. They've made a lot of money.
They had a big opportunity that was created for them by a number of social factors, including Prop 13.
Sure, but what you're telling them is, look, yes, we know this is going to cost you $25,000 at the point of sale. But it's good for the climate. It's good for the community where you've lived. If they're going to stay in Davis, it's still good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure some would say, no, I don't want to do it. But I can see a conversation there that might get pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd have each side then talking to the other. One side says, housing is expensive, or I want to leave stuff for my kids, or I've got medical bills, or whatever, you know. And the other side is saying, but look what we're trying to do here. You know, the climate is getting worse.
Right.
We need to take steps. And then you probably would have a conversation, too, about where does the electricity come from? You know, obviously, if it's solar versus if it's coming from a natural gas plant or a coal plant. But, I mean, I guess I wonder, is this part of your point about how you make a plan workable, is that you sort of get into these details and you talk to people about what you're really trying to achieve with goals that are realistic as opposed to, you know, maybe aspirational, but in the end, not very authentic.
Right. And also part of doing this almost action by action rather than like saying, okay, we're going to do this whole big portfolio with 40 or 50 actions in them, that you build them action by action, is you can have that conversation.
Yeah.
So you can have this one about electrification. You go, yeah, well, so you'll take a certain amount out of your equity, out of your house when you sell it. But we recognize that you might face constraints that aren't feasible for doing this. So, for example, it might be that the service that PG&E has out in the street in front of you, it's going to take too long to rebuild that underground service. So we'll give you an exemption from doing that. Or, you know, the panel is in a place where you can't pull the panel out and replace it in some particular way. Or you've only owned the house for 3 years and you haven't built the equity in the house to be able to finance this kind of change. You only made, you know, $10,000 off the sale of your house. Well, we can give you an exemption. But let's talk about the special exemptions rather than coming in and saying, well, we have this plan, and oh, damn, it's not going to work the way we thought it is. I guess we'll dump that idea.
Yeah.
You know, so these individual discussions give you an opportunity to identify those actions and where you want to focus on this. And part of this is also kind of the flip side is the Yolo County plan. So the Yolo County plan relies on carbon sequestration in agricultural soil. So what happens is you can manage the soils as you farm in a way that doesn't deplete the carbon out of the soils. And that's one of the things that American agriculture is actually pretty rough on soil, and we've wasted a lot of the resources in soil. And they're coming up with a whole number of different actions in which you are able to capture much more of the carbon in the soil, and it makes the soil healthier in the long run. So it's more sustainable. So we pursued that idea somewhat in Yolo County, and actually did even more of it in Sonoma County in a subsequent plan, helped them work through their plan. It's like 2/3 of the emission reductions for Yolo County is coming from this sequestration component. But that's one where we had individual conversations about the plan, focused on it, and actually thought about financing it. How do we pay for it as well? Which is partly, there's, I think, probably an opportunity for someone like Davis to buy credits, essentially, from Yolo County for doing the plan. And with that, those credits go directly into funding and paying for those extra costs of doing the sequestration, because it costs the farmers some to do that.
And then that offsets Davis's emissions.
It offsets their emissions. Instead, Davis put in their plan that they wanted to do sequestration on 5,000 acres of land. Meanwhile, Yolo County has 400,000 acres, I think.
And again, sequestration, in this case, you're talking about like natural. You're talking about like trees and land use. And
right.
Like that.
Not storing it underground, not pumping it underground like some of the other plans are.
Can you do a quick station ID? We are talking with Richard McCann, who is an energy consultant, founding partner of M-Cubed Consulting. And we're talking about how do you come up with a climate action adaptability plan for a place like Davis, Yolo County, that, you know, can actually work, that people actually want to follow, that makes a difference. So one word comes to mind, Richard, as we're talking about, is nuance. You know, I mean, as you talk about with electrical, it's like, okay, you've got an old house. I'll tell you what, you can sell that house. We're not going to require you to spend, you know, $80,000 or whatever. That number's made up, but, you know, a big number to catch up in this one area this time. Or cars. Is it an electric car versus a gasoline car when it comes to parking? Or even what you said earlier about green belts and bike lanes. We love our bike lanes in Davis, but yeah, we're fooling ourselves if we think that's making a big difference in emissions. And then, of course, there's also that question too, right? I mean, Davis could get very, very green. Yolo County could. And all the emissions saved here might be more than overpowered, so to speak, by, you know, 1 hour of a wildfire. Or because we get bad wildfires in California, or, you know, coal plants being built overseas, things like that. How do you address that as part of a plan? I mean, is that another conversation we just have to have and say, yeah, you know, it's a small part, but we all got to do our part? I mean, and does that work?
Well, yeah, there's a, you know, the old saying of think globally, act locally. And there's a certain aspect of that is to think about, yeah, I can do my little part. And as long as that little part that I'm doing doesn't shift the burden somewhere else, which is part of thinking globally, then at least I'm making some incremental small change and I'm doing what I can do. So, for example, we eat a plant-based diet, mostly. My wife much more strictly than me. I go off and eat cookies or whatever. but that is a small part, our small part of trying to reduce our individual carbon footprint in a way that is improving the environment and is not creating a problem for somewhere else. Here's another example of doing something at least part way that makes an effect, which is we just bought a plug-in hybrid car. It's not a fully electric car. We recognize that EVs, for our purposes, aren't quite ready. There's things that I want to be able to do with an electric vehicle that isn't offered on the market yet. But we bought a bridge, basically, to get us to that point that still is going to make a dent in our carbon footprint.
So the argument here is basically it is an individual responsibility, even if what the individual does objectively doesn't really make any difference in terms of reducing sea level rise.
Right. Know. Well, it's all accumulation of individual actions.
Which you can say about a lot of human behavior, I think. I mean, you know, if you treat other people well, no one's going to know five states away that maybe you, you know, opened a door for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it tends to redound. It tends to somehow, in that case, it's not quite as scientific, but I mean, it, you know, it tends to have an influence, I think, on behavior.
Right. And it's, I was watching a documentary last night. I wish I could remember the name, on Netflix, because we caught it in the middle of it, but then I caught it again, which is about a fan in Philadelphia who happens to have the same last name, McCann, and he was having problems, self-image problems, even had suicidal thoughts. And he then, at some point, a big Phillies fan, must have gone to almost all the games from what I could tell, wore Phillies equipment all the time. He started a movement in August of 2023. Their shortstop was having a terrible season. He was 0 for 17, all sorts of errors. He says, okay, everybody, this weekend, every time this guy comes up for bat, we're going to give him a standing ovation. And so they did this where they gave him an ovation. And he went, he broke his drought, hitting drought, and then he hit a 3-run homer the next day. And they went on this huge streak. The guy hit 17 home runs in the next month. So kind of, you know, it's the doing something that other people see as supportive can actually create an effect.
Yeah, everybody who was standing in that standing ovation, any one person probably would not have been missed, any 10 people. But it's the
40,000 people standing.
The display of it, yeah, that was persuasive.
Right.
We've got just a few minutes left. I'm wondering if there's anything in particular that you would recommend for Davis or for Yolo County in terms of the plan.
I think that the biggest thing that I found missing in both of the plans was not basically turning to take advantage of the federal tax credit programs that had just come out. So the Inflation Reduction Act. We ended up writing like a 25-page report on what are the opportunities for individual actions that can be funded through tax credits and tax rebates and other programs. And the climate action plans in both cases basically said, well, if people call us up, we'll help them, or, you know, kind of a passive way of addressing that. And these are, there's, in the case of the, like, home electrification. I think there was up to $24,000 worth of credits available for households and federal tax credits. And the state had a number of credits that were also available out there. And so I think that that's one of the cases where I would have almost turned the plan on its head and said, okay, what are these various credits? How do we aggressively get people to adopt those credits and do those? And then also, how do we get the home installers, the HVAC contractors, to pursue these credits aggressively and make it their frontline action that they're doing with every single customer, even to the extent of knowing customers that have 25-year-old furnaces, they know that they're going to be ending sometime soon. Rather than waiting for the furnace to break, let's go and talk to them about how to package up their heat pump and their air conditioner and their hot water heaters and convert it all at once.
Because I imagine some of those credits may not be around in the new presidential administration.
Who knows what's going to happen with those sorts of things? And I think that those credits have enough legs that they'll probably ride out at least for the next 4 years. Now, what happens if something changes in 4 years again? But that's one example. And then on the other hand, I would say focus a lot less on municipal activities. So they both have electrify their fleet and do something in their buildings and spend a lot of time on that. Don't make that part of the plan. Just tell the public works or the facilities managers, just go do that and come back to us. Don't put it in your plan.
I saw those in the plans, and I figured that's kind of the low-hanging fruit, right? The idea is you get something started, and then you address the bigger, tougher issues later, when maybe climate change is more persuasive to more people. Because I think, obviously, if it became less of a political issue, it would probably be easier to do these kinds of conversations and such that we're talking about.
Right. Right.
So we're very near the end. I do want to mention when you're going to be speaking. It's going to be February 9th, and this is at the Davis United Methodist Church on Anderson Road. It's a forum that's arranged by the church's Service and Justice Committee, but anyone can come to it. I think it's going to be about 11:30 a.m., something like that.
Right. I think 11:50, I think, is what I remember about. I have to double-check that. Yeah. But yes, after I believe shortly after their services.
And so anyone can come, and we'll be talking a little bit kind of like we've been today, perhaps. I mean, it'll be different people, different conversation, but the same basic idea. How do you come up with a plan that actually works? People can actually feel good about following and will make a difference.
Right, right. I'm hoping to start a bigger conversation in the community about what they want to do next so that we can get these things off and running.
All right. Well, thank you, Richard, for talking with us today.
Sure. My pleasure to do this. Look forward to doing it again someday.
We've been talking with Richard McCann, lives in Davis, energy consultant from M-Cubed Consulting. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville, KDRT, 95.7 FM, KDRT.org. Thank you for listening.